I'm going to talk about putting a file system into a device driver, which sounds like a pretty crazy thing to do. Can everybody hear? Okay, too loud? First question, why would anybody ever want to do this? Back in 2001, Peter Ambin posted that message on Linux kernel. So basically, Linus said, no more major and minor numbers are going to be added. No more, and we'd better find something else. We're running out of space. Currently, a major and minor is 8 bits, major, 8 bits, minor. We're running out of numbers. Something had to be done. So, obviously, a huge giant flame war erupted. People said we needed to make a 32-bit DevT, 16 and 16 for major and minor. That argument just came up again, I think, yesterday on Linux kernel. Linus said one better idea might be just putting a file system into a driver. But it sounds like a really strange thing. I mean, who would want to put a file system? You plug a device in, and you have to mount a file. I mean, it's not a very obvious solution. Nobody really ever does things like that. You plug a device in, want to get your files off, but everybody's really used to these. And that's what the majority of digital cameras are. You plug it in, mount your file system, and go. So it's not an unheard of idea. So, to do this, there's disadvantages and advantages. One advantage is you don't have to ever call any more ioctls. For those who don't know, ioctl is a system call. You pass a binary blob into the kernel, and you get usually a binary blob back. People hate them. One reason they hate them is it's you're making your own system calls up. The 64-bit people really hate these things. Right, Anton? Because you have to thunk across your layers, right? I'm going to run out of power. Sorry. Another good thing is all of a sudden devices are accessible from scripts, Perl scripts. You can write a bash script and see all the devices on your system, control them. Really easy to do. You don't have to make ioctl calls. You don't have to do weird binary blobs. Perl doesn't handle that really well. Bash handles it not at all. And the best thing is there's no more major and minors are ever needed. Just have to mount them. And so we won't run out of numbers. We can keep making up new weird names, and we'll get there. Big disadvantage is it makes your code a lot more complex. 2.2, to put a device file system to a device driver was a lot of work. 2.4 got a lot easier. The VFS layer cleared up a lot. And 2.5, it's even easier. There's a libfs code now. Makes things a lot smaller. It's still, there's a lot of work. I'll go through what you got to do, and it's not as easy as just registering and going. Another weird thing is you have to mount the file system somewhere. And a lot of that involves user training, which is, it's hard to tell a user that, yes, you have to mount this file system in order to get to all your PCI slots. It's not intuitive. It takes a lot to get over that. That's getting better. There's more file systems now in the kernel, so it's getting a little more obvious. And the distros are starting to automatically mount them, so users never have to mess with that. So what's in the kernel? There's a few examples already in the kernel. The PCI hotplug file system. PCI hotplug allows you to walk in and pull out a PCI card while the machine's still running, plug a new one in, power it back up. Big servers have it. A lot of big Intel servers have it. The PowerPC 64, IA 64, a lot of those have it. This code's in the kernel today. It's in 2.4 and 2.5. Here's an example. If you do a tree on the file, there, you see I have four slots. And I have different files under each directory. I have a bash script now that can control all my PCI slots. Bash script's 20 lines long. I replaced about a 10,000 line long GTK program just to control PCI slots because I don't have to use ioctls and all that mess. You can also see devices that export some things and some that don't. Like there's a test file in slot 5. Other slots don't have it. That's an obvious, intuitive way of saying, hey, I can run a hardware test on slot 5, but the other ones don't support it. If you didn't have a file system representation, you'd have to query the whole core, get the information back, and build it up again. Here, it all shows it for you. You can see the current bus speeds, latch speeds, tension. And you can change these things. This is how you change things, too. I'll go into that later. The USB file system, that's been in there since 2.2. 2.4 and 2.5, it's all there. This is a little weird because you can do ioctls. In fact, you have to do ioctls on these things. You can just read the files. This shows I have 5 USB devices attached to bus 1 and 2 attached to bus 2. And you can do ioctls on them. You can read and write USB data to the device. That allows you to write user space USB drivers, which is good to get drivers out of kernel into the user space. A lot of people use this. GPhoto uses this a lot. Sane Project uses this a lot. Sane Project uses it like almost entirely, so we are about to remove the scanner driver that's in the kernel. So there's some examples. So, is everybody convinced that it's a good thing to do? Any questions, just shout them out. Yeah?
With the last example, you were saying ioctls will still be used. With the file system, would that be phased in, so it's just using the file system instead?
Well, you are. You still, you open like 003, and you start doing ioctl calls on that file handle.
So it's just more complicated than a read write?
Yeah. USB, there's different types of packets you can send down through USB. So you're saying, oh, I want this specific type of packet. I want to get it back. I don't like that. I really would like to rewrite this so that, like under 003, it'll show all the different files for all the different types you can read and write. My copious free time isn't there. Yeah?
What do you mean by getting the driver into the user space and getting it out of kernel space, and why is that better?
It's better because kernel space, if you mess up in your kernel driver, you can crash your system. Mess up in user space, you just kill your process. Kernel memory isn't, and nobody else can use it. Once it's there, it's not available for anybody else to use. User space, it's swappable. It's a good thing to move things out, if we can. Some things need it. Video drivers need it for speed. Devices that emulate like serial ports, they still want to be able to look like a serial port. But in all, there's GPhoto, dumped a lot of stuff to user space. The same, they just open up and start reading raw image data out. Some people argue that that might be faster if it's in the kernel space, but those things are pretty slow. USB is slow anyway. So,
yeah. Do you see these kind of interfaces deprecating some of the existing /proc stuff, like /proc/PCI, for example?
Yeah, there's another replacement for things like that called SysFS, and I'll talk about a little bit of that later. But we could. I almost rewrote /proc/PCI as a PCI file system, and it works really easy. Yet that code is so small. I mean, it was a big trade-off. It was a lot more code to do it than it was there. So, anything else? Okay, so how do you do this? As you can see, it's not as simple as just registering a character device and going away. You have to create a file system type, you have to register the file system with the core, you need to mount the file system, either have the user mount it and the kernel mount it, you need to create the super block, and then you need to create the files. The last one is kind of weird in that RAMFS is in the kernel today, and it provides a really good framework for creating a RAM-based file system. But from that, all the users create files and users delete files. The kernel isn't the one doing it. For a driver, you want the kernel to be the one that creates the files and deletes the files. And you don't want users to be able to write it, or create files or delete files. Right now in the PCI hot plug file system, users can create files and delete files. It's not a good thing. Anybody want to send a patch? Okay, so how to create a file system type. This radically changed from 2.2 and 2.4 to 2.5. 2.5, it looks sane. You create a file system structure. You say, this module owns it. You give it a name. You give it a function to a function that's going to create your super block. I'll go into that a little bit later. And the last thing, you need to specify what's going to happen when your super block goes away. And the kill litter super is a function that's in the VFS. And what you're saying by saying that you want that to happen is I'm creating a file system that's entirely based in RAM. There's no disk associated with it. Store everything in RAM. And when everything gets shut down, just delete it all and forget about it. You don't have to worry about flushing anything to a disk or any of that mess. For 2.4 and 2.2, it was a little bit not intuitive. You had this weird macro that would basically almost do the same thing as what above. The litter, instead of specifying kill litter super, you had to give it a flag. And the FS single flag is a little different. FS single says, I only want one super block in the whole system. What that means is you can mount file systems in different places on a disk at the same time. For a RAM-based file system, you can mount a /temp, /var temp. If you add a file to /temp, it doesn't show up in /var temp. But for a disk or for a device, for a driver, you want, no matter where you mount it, you want to see all the same files. So it's saying keep one copy in memory. And since there's one copy in memory, no matter where it's mounted, they'll all show the same file tree. So if you modify it in this one, it's also still over here. And that's a good thing. You can do it without it. It gets really complex, and it's a pain to debug. Cool. Okay, then you have to register the file system. You need to tell the kernel, hey, I got something. Really easy thing, just call register file system. Check the result. Is Rusty here? Oh, damn. Rusty doesn't check the result. Go, send a patch to him. And there's a futex file system. So that's it. Real simple, nice and easy. When you're done and you're shutting everything down, you need to unregister the file system. That's it. When you do this, now your file system will show up in /proc/file system. And you'll see the little name there, and now you can mount it. That's about it. Now mounting it. This gets really weird. For most devices and most drivers, all you have to do is just call kern mount. This says, mount this file system internally. Don't expose it to the user. So the kernel mounts it inside, and then you can still do all the file system operations. There's a whole, the whole big tree is in the kernel and not exposed. If you mount it, then you'll see the whole big thing view. So it's a way to get things going so you can start adding files. That's one way of doing it, and I really, really recommend doing it that way. The second way of doing it is let the user do it. And so that let the user do it means whenever mount gets called, your driver will be called, this is how it wants to mount it, and at that point in time, you start creating all your files. That's really hard, because if you're adding devices and removing devices and the file system isn't mounted, you need to keep track of everything. And if you were to see some really scary code, look at 2.4 and 2.2 for the USB file system. It does that. It keeps things in memory and keeps track of what everything is going on. When it's mounted, all of a sudden it blasts and it creates everything. It's scary. So don't do that. And the last one is really weird. You only want to mount it when it's really needed. If you ever do this, see the paper I have and steal the USB file system code. And yeah. Okay. Yeah, there is a that defaults there in the kernel now.
Okay, it doesn't do for.
I just added it with a big patch that you sent me. Yeah. It's in 2.5. Yeah, that is the problem. Yeah. Provide a default place to mount your file system. Or just provide some policy. And yeah. So like sysfs, people are mounting it at /sys. USB file system gets mounted at proc, bus, USB, yeah. This module line? No, that's 2.4. Well, you can't do that for declaring a file system in 2.4. The this module macro is in 2.4. So does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, this module is used so that the file system core knows to increment your module count whenever the file system is mounted. The VFS uses that. A lot of driver cores are now switching to use that, because to do module locking yourself, like when your driver gets called, then you increment your count, you got to race there. It's better for the person who's calling you increment your count before you get there. Does that help? Okay. So I'm going to go into why the last one's really tough. USB and the PCI hot plug, there's one module that contains a file system. So you got a file system and a module. What? Oh, okay. I can reach. Can you see? Okay, so you got a file system and a module, and then you got like a whole bunch of USB drivers. And you don't want anything showing up in this file system until one of these gets loaded. So if you mount your file system now, I'll call it kern mount, nothing will show up. That's fine. But the VFS just incremented your module count. So if you add some things here and then delete them, you can never unload this module. It's really hairy. Same thing with the PCI hot plug. So you want, at the time this guy gets mounted, or this guy gets loaded, the file system needs to go through some gyrations internally and say, hey VFS, I really want you to increment my count now. And then, hey VFS, I really want you to decrement my count now when the USB device goes away. See the code, see the paper I wrote. There's some really good locking code that Alvira wrote to do all this stuff. It's a really good example of writing SMP safe code with locking. It's good. Only do that if you really have to. Most drivers don't have to do it. SysFS doesn't have to do it. There was an example written on Linux Weekly News by Jonathan Corbett. He proved that you don't really need to do this big nasty stuff unless you have two modules split. So, any questions about that? Kind of glossing over that. Okay, next we got to create the super block. One function, one line. That's it. Real simple. There we're telling it now, create the single. So this is for 2.5. In the declaration, we never told it we only want one instance, like in 2.4 we did. Here we do for 2.5. That's it. We pass in the file system type, down to that, the flags. And we pass in a function pointer to our fill super. So that goes into the VFS, and the fill super call looks like this. Is that readable? That just goes through, initializes some values, the page cache size, the page cache shift, a magic number. Every file system needs to have a unique name and a unique magic number. If you want some really good laughs, go through and read the magic numbers for file systems. Read the magic number that Rusty put in for the Futex file system, if anyone wants to grep for that one. That's a good one. And then we set up some operations, some default operations, and then we create an inode. File systems have superblocks, inodes, and dentries. Superblock is what's in the file system, or it describes the file system to the kernel. You can have multiple ones, like I said before, just one. Inodes are what refer to the actual data in a file. And then a dentry is a pointer to that inode. If you mount a file system in different locations, you can have multiple dentries all pointing to the same inode. And an inode usually refers to some data on a disk. Here we're referring it to something in memory. Does that make sense? I mean, I know that the dentry and inodes and superblocks get a lot of confused. Did I get it right? Okay. So here we create an inode, and we allocate a root inode. We have to make the main top of the file system root inode. We create that one.
Root dentry.
Root dentry. Oh, we create the dentry, sorry. Yes, we create the inode and assign that to the dentry. Create the dentry for that, and then we save it. And we'll use that later. Actually, we use that later. That's it. So, yeah.
What's the size of the SM4 magic field?
It's a 32-bit. Oh, sorry, it's a 32-bit number. Yeah.
I was just thinking we had this other problem with that 8-bit.
Yeah.
It looks like we just moved it.
We did. But yeah, it's a 32-bit number. And right now, people are just making them up. So if we start getting that many. Yeah, we're good for a while, but it would be nice to have a table of them somewhere. So yeah. So, how do you create an inode? To create an inode, you have to do something like this. This is what the USB file system does. You create the mode, you set the permissions on the thing, you set the size, and you set the time to be whatever it is right today at this moment, because you don't really care. And then, depending on the type of the inode, you do something different. If it's a special inode, you let the VFS handle it. If it's a register one, you just set the operations of the inode to the default. And I'll go into operations on inodes later. If it's a directory, you set the directory to be the directory operations. Then you do this really weird thing down here by increasing the link. And Linus went through and fixed a whole bunch of file systems like this. It seems that KDE and its file manager really wants that set to that value properly. Otherwise, it really starts getting messed up. Is that right, Pat? Is that the explanation for that? Okay. So, I don't really understand that, but he fixed my code. I'm happy. And then we return the inode. That's all you got to do to create an inode. But again, you have to do this kind of things. So now we have inode, we know how to create inodes, we have a file system mounted in memory, we want to create a file, we want to do something with this. So from within the kernel, you can write a little function that calls create file. Give it a name, give it some permissions, give it a dentry that is the parent, because you want to chain all these together in some kind of tree. Give it some blob, so that slot is just a value that's going to get passed later on. I'll show you that. And then give it some default operations, because every file we want it to do something different than other ones. So, how do you write a create file? Here's an example of create file. It goes through and just basically calls another file function because create by name, so we create some big dentry by that. If it worked, then we'll go and we'll set that data pointer that was passed to us, which we said was a slot, some void blob, we're going to hook it to the inode. And we're going to need that for when open gets called, because we're going to need to know what file was really called. And then we set up the file operations based on what the file operations that were passed to us. And we set the permissions. Is that, am I going too fast for that? No, dentry was never created if you got an error back, because we're returning the dentry.
Oh, so it's uninitialized at that point.
Yeah, it's uninitialized, and we want the person that it returns to get back. So I'll show you create by name. So create by name, this one stretches past two screens. Remember we saved the first dentry for the main root? So if you create a file that wants to be the very first one, we don't know that name, so we can just say null there. And this code will figure out, oh, you don't know what it is, so we're going to throw it at the top of the root. And so it picks it out. And then if it really can't find that, we got big problems, so we exit. And then we keep on going down. We set the dentry to null. We lock the parent's dentry's inode. And then we call a very nice function that's in the VFS that says getDentry. GetDentry will dig down by the name and see if there really is one there already. If there isn't, because we hope there isn't, because we're creating it, it'll create it and pass it back as a pointer. Now, in Rusty's talk, he talked about most all functions return one or zero, a negative value or zero for true. Here we're returning a pointer. If that function failed, you have to do something with a little macro called isError to check the pointer. And if that really is an error, then we need to do something else. So if there is no error, then we make the file. If it's directory type, we make it. We say make a dir or directory. If it isn't, we say create. For a long time, and here's the bug in the PCI hotplug file system, it doesn't do that. It says VFS make dir and VFS create file. And the VFS will be glad and go off and do it. But if the VFS does it, it'll also let users do it. So you have to rewrite the make dir and the create. It's a little bit of a more pain. So you end up rewriting a little more to keep users from doing things. I'm not going to show those. Those are real tiny. They're in the code. And then we keep on going down. If there really was an error, we pick it out. And we pick it out by looking at the pointer error macro. Then we release the semaphore, and then we return the error. So here, if we didn't get the dentry, we point. So, yeah. Yes. Yeah, there would. And there's more and more file systems being added, so yes, that would be a good idea. So, yeah, in my copious spare time. Well, hey, you're writing a file system. Next day, you'll do it. So, does that make sense? Right. Okay. All right, now we're back to file operations. When a file is opened, or you got a file handle, you want to open it, read it, write it, close it, seek through it, and stuff like that. You don't want the default operations. The default operations lets you start dumping data into it, dumping data out. You want to tell the VFS, call my function. So when the power file is read or the power file is written to, call a function in my driver. And that points to those functions. Default open is something you also have to provide. Remember that blob we stuck on the inode was the slot that was really being referenced to? It was a generic IP. So at open time, we have an inode and we have a file. When we read and write and release, we only have a file pointer. We don't have a reference back to the inode. So we need to know that information back. So we grab it off the IP, off the inode, and stick it in our little private area on a file. That way, under read and write, we know what we're talking about and return. So there's a default open. And that would be perfect to put in the libfs code, James, a default open function that does just that. And llseek, there's a generic file, llseek, that's in the VFS, and that handles all the seeking properly. So what do these file operations look like? For read, these get complex, and these are a pain. And by starting to write one of these, you realize you really want to use sysfs. Sysfs hides all this mess from you. And go see Pat's talk tomorrow about using sysfs. But here's, if you want to do it yourself, here's how you do it. The first thing we do is check to see if the offset is not zero, or is greater than zero. If it is, that means we're trying to seek through a file. And we don't want to mess with trying to figure out halfway through our data. We just want to read and write a single value. So if they're trying to seek to the file and go past the first spot, we just return saying, hey, you can't do that. It's a cop-out. It doesn't let you edit the file, but you don't want to be editing a single value that's on a device. It works well. Then the next one is we got to check the count. The count is how big of data we're being asked to read here. That greater than 16,384, if you don't have that, it's a big security hole. Size T is signed. It's a signed 16-bit value. And if you go over that value, you can wrap negative, and you can start reading kernel memory anywhere. No, there's something weird there. It's a 16-bit value signed. That's about it, right?
No, there isn't.
Oh. There's some reason for that. Is Alan here? No. He gave me this patch. What?
Is it count plus offset?
Is it count plus offset?
I think size T is unsigned, but L of T is signed. When you do count, when you add them together, then you get it.
Okay. Is that right? Yeah. Yeah, we're only reading or writing one byte, so that getting a whole free page is extreme overkill, and everybody has always pointed that out to me. Someday I'll fix it. Please send me a patch. It should just be a stick it in a byte there. But yeah, there's something weird with that. That count has to be that number, and I think he's right with the interaction. So if you look back in little old kernels, that's not there. You can read and write any kernel value. That's a big security hole. Not nice. And then we check the offset again. Why do we check it twice? I don't remember. Okay. And we check the slot. See, slot was stored on the file private data. And that's now we have access to it. See, we don't have access to the inode at the top. So now we really make sure that nothing really went wrong. And we're OK. We grab a free page in memory, based on whatever size it is, because that was simple at the time. And then we call down. We call get power status based on this slot. And that goes off and gets the power status of the slot, returns a value, and stores it in the value variable, and returns the value whether it's true or not. Then I print the value into the page to make it an ASCII, because it was binary, copy that back to user space, or into user space, never back. And if something happened there, we return fault. And hopefully that passes Rusty's audit. Those. Then we increase the offset, saying how much we really copied. So yeah, maybe that's why that is, that number.
Yeah.
Something weird there. Then we free the page and return the value. And we return how many bytes we wrote, because that's the way the read function works. So that's about it. So if you do cat on the power thing, you go back a 1 if it's on. You get back a 0 if it's off. And an ASCII value, you don't get back a binary value. So does the read function kind of make sense? Write. Write's a little tougher. Write does the same things at the beginning, kind of made it so it fit. Checks again. And since we're writing data from user space, we need to copy it into kernel space before we can do anything with it, see what it is. So we create a buffer that's the same size plus one that's being passed to us. We set it to zero because we're going to do a string operation on it later. And then we copy from user. So we copy it, otherwise we wouldn't be able to read it. And make sure it's okay, and that works. Then we convert the value from binary to, no, from ASCII to binary with a real nice little simple string belong. There's a lot of functions like that in the kernel that add the simple thing to the front of it. They're not as powerful as the glibc, as the whole standard C one is, but they work real well. There's a lot of the boundaries and the weird things don't really work, but for what we need, that's all we need to do. Since we have an unsigned long value, we mask off the end because we only want to care about 8 bits. And then we, thanks to Rusty, call trimodule set. Man, I really want to make fun of him today. Increment the value of the module that we're going to call. Then we call into the module that has that slot and tell it either, hey, disable it or enable it based on the value we got. If they didn't write a 01, we say, hey, you can't do that. We decrement the module count from the module we just called, and then we return. Clean up and return. And that's it. So so you write a 1 to a slot, and the whole thing gets powered up. You write a 0 to a slot, it gets powered down. That does the work. Now, the act of powering up and down is specific to the hardware, but this is the file system, so that's all you need to do. So writing, that kind of makes sense? So we can add files. We can do things with them. When we're done, we want to shut everything down. We need to remove them. Here's how you remove a file. Pass it the dentry that was saved in the very beginning when we created the file. You need to save those around somewhere. You can't go by names. And then we just delete it. And again, we have to specify our own remove directory and our own unlink. If you don't, use the VFS ones, and then a user can delete files or delete directories. And if the user deletes a file that you created and you try to delete it again, not good things happen. There is one file system I've seen from the crash dump people that they wanted users to create their own files. And based on what file was created, they would do something. The device mapper file system also does the same thing. That's really weird. People are arguing whether that's a good thing or not. I'd say no, but some people say yes. So you're putting another parser in the kernel. Yet we just put a parser in the kernel by having to read that value. So they're saying, well, that, you can do that. Why can't we do this? So half of one. So that's all you need to delete a file. That's it. But that was a lot of code. And yeah, that's all my talk. You got done? Cool. So that was complex, and I blew through that. There's got to be some questions. There's a paper written. I don't know when you're going to get them. It goes into a lot of these things, a lot more detail. There's a lot more details. Look at the code. Good code to steal. That's what you always want to do. SysFS. Pat wrote SysFS is good. And looking at this talk, I copied a lot of SysFS in the past. SysFS has fixed even more bugs. Copy that. Don't copy the PCI hot plug file system. That one's about to be removed and go into SysFS. The USB file system's pretty good. That's been stable for a long time. And I'll put the paper and these slides up on my website later today or tomorrow if we don't get them on a disk or something. So they'll be available on there. So. Any questions?
Yeah. Yeah, you have the device part going through dev bus PCI, get losses by CSP losses.
We had to pick a place to put it.
Okay.
Well, no, it's in Procbus PCI, right? Or USB. Procbus USB. Okay, I mixed the USB file system and the PCI hot plug file system examples. Is that, that's probably, I kind of was picking the better ones, the more clean ones, things like that. So. So internally, yeah, SysFS does something like that. SysFS makes that, when you create a file, a whole lot easier. It makes a little tiny macro that you can say, here's my read function, here's my write function. And the read and write functions are even smaller because it handles all that checking for the counts, allocating the memory, copying from user and back. And it makes that life a lot easier. If you do a driver, you just want to do something with SysFS, it's like 4 lines of code. It's really simple. And you don't even have to delete it because SysFS will delete it for you, which is even nicer.
Yeah.
Some important things are just figuring out if your users are going to be able to understand it. I found out a lot with the PCI hotplug file system that it took a lot of education saying, yeah, you really have to go mount something and talk to your PCI slots. And once they finally got over that, I still don't think some of them are bought into it yet. It's a different idea. This is a different concept. But it works really well. The VFS handles a lot of the cleanup of memory properly and the creation of memory properly as far as files go. So if you're in a file in the device, or in a directory when you move the device, it cleans up nicely for you. As far as things to look out for, look at the example code. There's a lot of little tricky things. The mount thing that's in the USB file system is just really tricky. Hopefully you can get away from that. Look at the VFS code. There's a lot. And as a real good, if you just want to read like how to do a RAM file system, read RAMFS. RAMFS code. It's really clean, it's really tiny, and it's nice. It's a good job. But you want to. So I unload the module. I unload the module to the slot. You have to clean up the files because they have pointers back to your module. So you don't want those files because they'll be called and your module's not there anymore. Or your device. You like USB. You pull your device out. You really want to remove that file that referenced that device. So there's a lot of times you have to remove the file. For devices that add or remove. A lot of things in the kernel are being more hot pluggable. You can hot plug CPUs now, memory almost, lots of things like that. So you want to make things nice. Anything else? Yeah. Yes. So the USB files need those. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So every USB device looks differently. So I can go into how USB works if you really want. That's okay. But so USB device will say I have these basically pipes. I have two pipes and they're of this type. So under that file, I make a new file for this pipe, a new file for that pipe. So then you know to read and write to talk to those pipes. Yeah, there is, and they have to be uniquely named. Just to be able to talk to them in the first place. So USB handles that well. So, and I think other device types are moving towards that. So it'd be nice if somebody wrote a FireWire one, things like that. So. Anything else? Okay, on time. Great. All right, thanks a lot.